Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gems of Life show. My name is Fadwa. I am your host. And today I have a special guest who is actually going to come in and talk to us. And it's a conversation, it's a dialogue, and we'll be talking more about the events that unfolded in London, Ontario. And this is regards to our brothers and sisters, our Muslim brothers and sisters who were taken from us so suddenly in the most horrific and most tragedy events that we could ever think that it will happen behind our own homes or walking down the street. This is something that is so close to us personally, personally for me as a Muslim woman, but more so also for my guest as well. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Fadwa. Thank you for this invitation.
I know we had the community, Kitchener-Waterloo region, went through a lot of stuff. They had to do different vigils. They had to meet, you know, in different places just to support the families. Do you remember that day when this happened? Because I had a day and a half later. It wasn't on the news on the day off. We found out a day later, later on in the evening, that's when everything started coming up. And to me, it was unbelievable. Like something like this, so horrific. How was it that we were not able to hear of it on the same day? Like, what was it for you? For me, I found it a day and a half, almost in the evening, the next day, later on in the evening, I found out.
Yeah, you know, it happened last Sunday. So it's been about 10 days. And we also found out, we were actually talking to somebody, a community, an organization in London. And, you know, there was in the afternoon, I think the meeting was around noon, and I'd heard about it. And, you know, there was something going on, but I didn't, you know, like ask to confirm or ask them what's going on. And that's true. You know, it really, it was that unthinkable was, you know, confirmed later in the afternoon, just around, you know, how you found out. We found out the same way. National Council of Canadian Muslims, they announced it, sort of confirmed it. There were obviously news came out as well at that time. Yeah, just completely. I mean, I think didn't sort of fathom. I think it took some time to even, you know, for it to sort of seep in and for us to really comprehend, you know, the enormity of it. And, you know, I mean, this is the work that we do. You know, I'm with the Coalition of Muslim Women. I coordinate, I'm the Director of Programs and Services, and we've been doing this work for 10 years. And so, yeah, it was just very, obviously, shocking, devastating, you know, just so many emotions that were going through at that time. And they still are, you know, still till today. It's just so many emotions. Grief, obviously, and just so such immense grief for that family. Like just the story of that family, as, you know, four members of a beautiful family, young family, just their lives taken away like that. So much hate. And yeah, there was a lot to process at the time. But then, you know, for us, we also had to take action as well. So, okay, there's this happened. How do we respond? How do we respond to the community? How do we see what the community needs? How can we, you know, really be there, you know, when as this is happening, what can we do, right? So I think all of us were in that mode, but in us too, we were also, just started thinking about that. That sort of took away a little bit of that, you know, grief in a way, that we started going into action mode. So just immediately, you know, vigil that was held the next day, we were planning for that and contacting. So we weren't even, I guess, you know, just an hour or two, we were thinking about it. And then immediately we went into that mode. Okay, what needs to be done? You know, arranging this, contacting, and sending emails and press releases, and so yeah, it's there.
It was a a rough day actually for a lot of Muslim community, actually a whole Muslim community. It got, you know, you get hit. That's four family members, three generations wiped out. Three generations. That to me was just too unbearable to bear. You know, you look at the 15-year-old to her grandmother, and then knowing that this 9-year-old boy has been left with no family. Mm-hmm. I have a 12-year-old son and 18-year-old daughter. And just to think of something like that right now, just to know, I can't even think about how would a 9-year-old understand the situation, comprehend what has happened. You know, what is it that, how is it that I'm still a survivor after losing all my four family members? Mm-hmm. Any word on that young boy?
The story that we're hearing of those initial moments when, you know, he's with his mother and the mother is obviously, you know, suffered fatal injuries, and he's, you know, just beside him and asking her that, okay, you know, this is enough. We need to go back home. That was, I also have a 12-year-old and, you know, those just very gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching stories. So he's you know, the family really wanted his identity to be protected and not to be, his name not to be released, his photo not to be released. So right now he is, the latest is, I believe he's in a stable condition, still in the hospital, out of danger. But other details are not forthcoming.
Okay. Yeah.
I believe his uncle, I think his dad's brother, he's in Ontario. So he was able to come and take care of, be there, you know, just with the family. So his family is there, and extended family, uncle, and he's there.
Yeah. It's hard to just lose one person and to lose all four. I cannot just imagine for the family members what they're actually going through. As you mentioned, you know, as the community, you went in and you just started taking action. What were some of the incidents or messages you're getting from the community? Because let me tell you, from the day that happened, even now, as I'll get off the parking lot, I'm at the supermarket, I'll go by Walmart or Canadian Tire, and I'm walking and I'll just feel like somebody's behind me, or the car driving, is he coming to my side? Because I'm avoiding to go on the, you know, cross the road as much as I can, because you still have that image in your mind. Mm-hmm. You're wondering, is somebody going to just, because these are families were just walking, clueless as to the danger, you know, and it was their right to walk down the street, but they did not realize that there's so much hate and Islamophobia out there that just walking down the street, you pretty much are not free just to do so.
Yeah.
What are the kind of messages are you getting from the community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, from the Muslim community, it just absolutely, you know, all of that fear for sure was there. There were people in communities and families and within my own circle as well, and staff and from the larger community, there was just reluctance to go outside for sure. You know, like they were thinking, okay, I was just outside, this could have been me. This was the sentiment that they shared. You know, this, I think, realization how close that this could have happened to them. I think like that, just the closeness of it, that you know, yeah, that this could have been them. So fear. So obviously there was a lot of fear, reluctance. There was at the vigil. So we had, you know, really a great gathering, I guess, online, virtually. It was a great gathering. 700 people, 800 people came from within the Waterloo region, obviously Muslim community as well as the larger community. And you know, they were just processing at the time. It was very raw. It was a day, it was the next day. And they were sharing, you know, absolutely, fear, feeling of that, you know, they're let down, feeling of anger that, you know, it had to happen again. Fear and, you know, a lot of anger at the even politicians, leadership that, you know, what are you doing? Why did it have to happen? Why aren't you taking action? So there was, you know, a lot of grieving, and people have been sharing those, you know, really deep, deep sentiments with us and at the vigil, outside.
You know, just when we think, like, remember in Montreal, whatever happened, just when you're thinking you've healed, mm-hmm. and you get comfortable, and then something like this happens, something mm-hmm. so drastic happens, and it just completely shakes you up, and you're thinking, okay, hold on, I thought we are at peace. I thought we're able to walk freely, just like anybody else. I thought people will go past my skin or the hijab, especially for women, mm-hmm. especially for women. I have even my 18-year-old daughter. Right now, I'm constantly worried for her when I'm not there with her, right? Because I don't know what kind of things that she'll be faced with. I know she's been faced with a lot of stuff. As an 18-year-old who was born in Canada, somebody mm-hmm. telling her, go back to your country. And she looks at this person and says, what do you mean go back to my country? I was born here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know? So the Islamophobia mixed with racism, it's very raw, it's very real. Mm-hmm. How are you measuring the effects of that? I know you've selected quite a few, you have data. Do you mind just sharing that with us as well, please?
Yeah, you know, for a first point, Fatwa, it's important to really center our youth and what they're going through. And, you know, those of us who have maybe come as newcomers, as settlers here on the land of the indigenous people. So for us, we have a different mindset. We have, in a way, a survival mindset. In a way, we have seen many times we're coming from, I very consciously don't talk about developing countries. I talk about exploited countries. Mm-hmm. So many of us are coming from exploited countries, you know, colonized countries, countries that are, you know, in difficult situations. So we have that connection. We have seen, you know, these kind of happenings maybe in ourselves or news. We read about what is happening to our countries of origin that we are, you know, we have absolutely a deep connection with. But the youth, those children who are born over here, for them, this is their home. This is our home as well. But, you know, that stronger connection, deeper connection, they have a different, it's a different world for them. They, you know, really, this is all they know. And, you know, they're not connected to whatever is happening back home. So for them, this experience is very earth-shattering. For them, you know, for someone to have the audacity to come and, you know, just ram and mow like human beings like this, mm-hmm. It's really devastating. And we really have to, you know, center youth and how and what they're feeling, what they're going through at this moment. It's really different. I mean, I think the most, it's all very gut-wrenching. It's all very heartbreaking. But, you know, kids who are asking questions, like, can I, is it okay if I go outside? I'm afraid to go outside. You know, is it okay if I don't know, play outside on the road like kids do? And I think those questions are really very, you know, depressing to hear that kids have to think about their safety.
You know, that's really key, actually, even when you talk about youth, right? And you talk about coming from countries where we've been afflicted to racism. I know what racism looks like, even in my own country, because we have cultural and clans and, you know, there's so many divisions even within our own countries. So you grow up knowing that there's limitations even within your own country. But for our children, to empower them enough to say, you know what, this is all I know. But it hurts them because that's all they know. So they haven't developed that thick skin to be able to take all that. And especially for our Muslim youth, because you have the racism aspect of it. And then they're also dealing with visible Muslim, and especially our young girls when they're putting on a hijab so that they're physically, that's their identity and people can see them and they can identify them based on their clothing. It is true. We need to empower children and educate our children where we don't let fear drive them. Even for our young children, we shouldn't let fear. And that's exactly what they want us to do, to have fear, to walk, you know, looking back and, you know, have that fear of, oh my goodness, something's going to happen. We shouldn't live our life that way. No one should. I think we should be able to feel free and safe. And it is a free and safe country. It's just for the small portion of people who are, you know, to take things to court.
Absolutely. So many amazing points. You know, youth who we already know, and research tells us that many have internalized Islamophobia. So they look at what the image is, what the outside world image is about Muslims. They also think that they are like that. So the caricatures, the stereotypes that the larger society has through, you know, media and arts and culture and video games and the way that this is spread, our youth also many times internalize those images and they feel this is who we are. So that's really troubling even before that. And then, you know, that disconnect that they may have with their identity, with their, you know, just a sense of connection with their faith, with their community, and wanting to not belong to that, like trying to reject it, trying to move away from it. You know, those are all, these are all sort of, you know, aspects that existed before London hate crime. And you know, we need to absolutely, you know, keep that center. Just understand that, you know, this is valuable, and what they have is, you know, is beautiful, and they have, you know, beautiful culture and tradition and faith, and, you know, all the positive aspects that that they're not ever taught in schools, in our curriculum, in our, you know, like this colonial sort of curriculum that we have, which has the standard European sort of this Eurocentric curriculum in schools that we have, Eurocentric, whatever European aspects are the amazing one, you know, they're setting the standard, those are setting the bars, and then everything else is subpar. So, you know, we have to counter that. We have to really help them build their inner self-esteem and self-worth. And really, we have to push back, but it's difficult. It's a really big challenge for sure.
Yes.
So there's, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's that. And you also then, I don't know if we can talk on this, and you also asked about reporting one, so I have that in mind as well.
Yes, no, absolutely. We will actually talk about the reporting. I'm just going to touch on about educating our youth, especially. Mm-hmm. I think it starts with as parents being the role models. Mm-hmm. And because I see the youth being split between and have that disconnect that you talked about. They are disconnected with themselves because there's that confusion. Okay, I was born in Canada. I'm Canadian citizen. Mm-hmm. And then I have this culture and, you know, and faith. And then they feel like they're disconnected. Which way do I go? Mm-hmm. Losing those values, right? And that confusion, who am I? Mm-hmm. And I see a lot with the youth now. Mm-hmm. So it's for us to just come back from a place of empowerment, inspiring them to a point where, okay, you are, these are your roots, to show them so that they can be proud. I think roots, when you have roots, that's your foundation of who you are, knowing where you came from, having that history. You know, and, but if they're lost between the two, halfway here and halfway there, it's very easy to get that disconnect. And they don't know who they are because they'll be too busy finding out, okay, I am Canadian, but then halfway they're still holding on to something they're not so sure about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You say it so well. Actually, one of the youth who participated in the vigil, he shared with us like this dilemma that he has. He's outside and, you know, the society demands him to act a certain way, to be a certain way, to dress a certain way, to eat a certain way, you know, and to act a certain way. So that there is that pressure that they face outside. And then at home, they have, you know, that another pressure at home as well, where they have to conform, they have to, you know, just live that way and talk in the language and all that. So really, it's a, they are in a really difficult situation. They are in sort of in these two worlds, where, you know, young minds, they are, you know, trying to find themselves, they're trying to find their place in the society. And it's just the pressure, the cultural pressure is too much. That's the thing. I think we don't realize because it's so subtle. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, the movies and the videos and the YouTube and influencers and, you know, like the, that surrounding, like they say, fish, you know, in water kind of thing. You don't, and we don't realize that there is water around us. It's so subtle, mm-hmm. the cultural influences, that then absolutely the kids, you know, children have a hard time to understand how they're being influenced. And then to counter it. So I 100% agree with you that empowering them and you know, I when I see my Indigenous brothers and sisters, how they're reclaiming their identity, their language, their culture, their history, that beauty was taken away from Indigenous brothers and sisters and neighbors and friends that we have here. And, you know, that devastated the community, that completely really had such a deep impact, how, you know, colonial mechanisms and the schoolings and the these residential schools that were created, they, it was very deliberately obviously done. But then we see and we learn, we can learn from that experience that it's not deliberately done, being done to us. But it's done, you know, to newcomers in a very subtle way. Mm-hmm. So so we have to, you know, have these conversations with our youth and, you know, just the importance and learnings from our Indigenous, I think, neighbors and friends and brothers and sisters. We can learn from their experience and just realize the importance of our roots and like heritage and
yes, and yeah absolutely, heritage, roots, that's your foundation. That's your foundation. And you know, of course there's things that like cultural beliefs that we can take, and there are those we can break away from, right? What serves us now, what serves our children, to that will strengthen them to be the best people they can be in the society.
You know, I often you know, think myself as a, you know, we are straddling two worlds, obviously. My family and sister, siblings and parents are back in Pakistan and I'm here. So I have two homes, you know, sometimes I feel like I don't belong to any of these. Sometimes I feel like I belong to both, you know, equally. And so, but yeah, you know, I feel many times, most of the times, I feel like I'm a bridge. And, you know, if we can, many times in one, the culture that I'm coming from, maybe that is one extreme and culture over here is the other extreme. And, you know, we are in such a beautiful place to bring the beauty of both the worlds together. And then, you know, that would be to build a new world and to, you know, really have that appreciation, because we are both now outsiders right now in the culture. So absolutely, I agree. The opportunity to really, you know, just grab and collect and gather the good that both the cultures, and leave behind those that are, you know, that those aspects that are not beneficial. And there's great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can, I'm not surprised the youth feeling the way they feel, because sometimes we can be strangers within our own culture. Mm-hmm. You know, I went back home after, I don't know how many years, over 20 something years. I was a stranger in my own home, right? Yeah. I had to relearn so many things. As old as I am, I had to relearn a lot of things. And I had to, it's basically, I'm showing that this is my country and I belong here. But at the same time, I was a stranger. I had to learn a lot of stuff so that they could embrace me and take me, because I was a stranger to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so and here I am again in Canada. I'm just like a stranger. And it's just like the way you said it so beautifully. We can combine and take both of the worlds and just combine and make it our own. Yes, for sure. So tell me about the data that you have been collecting. I know you know, your organization has worked really hard to do that in the community. How has that been going on? What is the latest data that you have, especially when it comes to Islamophobia?
Fadwa, we have been working on this sort of area, Islamophobia, racism, and well, primarily for the first 8 years or so, it was primarily Islamophobia in particular, and gendered Islamophobia, because we know that women, as you mentioned, are visible. Many of us who wear the scarf, we are visible. And, you know, there's that intersectionality piece added sort of marginalization. And obviously for Black Muslim women, there is another like third, fourth layer that Black sisters have of, you know, anti-Black racism on top of xenophobia and sexism and all that. So that work has been there. And now we are, you know, we have a quite comprehensive sort of strategy to counter this. At a really this grassroots level. We are obviously based here in Kitchener-Waterloo. And so at a really top level, we do quite a bit of advocacy, you know, with these large systems and school board and the police and the cities. And we had one, Bill 21, when that was instituted as the law in Quebec, we we're working with the politicians to prepare statements and do all that work. So there's advocacy that we do. We do trainings, anti-Islamophobia training. So region of Waterloo and well-being Waterloo region, city of Kitchener regularly. We do, it's a really comprehensive 7-hour training that we do split over 2 days. And you know, it's very interactive. And so this is for sort of corporate clients and but those who are serving Muslims and those who have Muslims as their staff. So that's the work that we do. And then at a individual level, we are serving the Muslim community and for and as well as the larger community. So the larger community, we are, you know, because at that individual level, then you're building bridges through acts of kindness. And, you know, so we have blood drives, we have writing cards for elders, we have, you know, this Ramadan iftar that is hosted every Ramadan when we were hosting in person. And so we have tea and tales with Muslim women, showcasing the cultural diversity that that is there in our community. So those are there. And then for the Muslim community, we have this reporting system. And so educating the community around what's the difference between hate crime and hate incident, and, you know, what's the importance of reporting, how to report it, you know, what, how to respond. If this happens, then how should how should you respond to it? And then we have one-on-one support if they need, if it's Islamophobia or racism, xenophobia. If there's discrimination, for example, at work, then we provide one-on-one support. Mifra Awed, my colleague, she coordinates the project. The program name is Together Against Islamophobia. So she collects, she provides that one-on-one support. So with the data collection, basically, we actually launched a quite comprehensive reporting system in March. Yeah, it was March. And so there's a website, reportinghate.ca, where we are encouraging the community members to, you know, report these incidents. Many times we, you know, brush it off. We say, okay, this happened. We know it in our hearts that this was Islamophobic or racist, but we say, let it go. Let's move on. That's what, it wasn't so bad. You know, like all those kind of reasons and explanations and justifications we try to deny what really happened. So we are really encouraging, you know, that we really need to know what is happening, who is this happening to, where is this happening, so that we can keep a track of it, we can do analysis, we have data, we have evidence, and we can, you know, respond, okay, if this is happening, these incidents are happening more in this area, location, then let's do something, like let's respond to it in a, you know, informed manner. If this is happening at this particular workplace, okay, if we know that there have been a couple of reports coming from this report, what, from this, you know, job site, and or this employer, what's going on here? Let's, you know, let's look into it. Let's take some action. Let's try to intervene. If this is happening in buses, okay, like is this particular, well, do we need to do something? Maybe, you know, that enters Islamophobia training we need to do. So all this, that data is really important because it's evidence-based, and it will really inform, you know, our work. It will hopefully inform, it's not just for us, you know, like that data, we will be publishing, not the names or obviously the private information, but just that aggregate data, and you know, hopefully this will be useful for the community. And but also this is not just for the Muslim community, because we know this is for all racialized communities. Because we know that Islamophobia, first of all, doesn't just impact Muslims. It impacts people of color generally, and specifically, you know, Sikh community. Our Sikh brothers and sisters, they really have suffered so much because, you know, as an outsider, white supremacist, they can't distinguish between a Sikh man, you know, with a long beard and a Muslim man, or a Gurdwara or a mosque. For them, it's one and the same thing. So and there is that that aspect, and then racism, you know, anti-Black racism and xenophobia. I mean, these are not just you know, Muslim issues. You know, it's, we know that it's broader. So our service, this reporting for hate incident, hate crime and discrimination, these are for all racialized communities. And so so one can report online, there's a phone number, one can WhatsApp, one can you know, message. Ikram Momini is leading this documentation. So so yeah, that's a system. And you know, it's and then, you know, just within the last couple of days, a lot of people are coming forward, and we're also reporting the incidents that have occurred in the past 5 years as well. So if there's been any incident, please, you know, I really encourage and request everyone to take some time and contact reportinghate.ca. And you can, yeah, just report anonymously as well. And you can also report as a witness. So if you have witnessed discrimination at a workplace, you know, as an ally, if you have witnessed a neighbor harassing another neighbor, you can also report to us as well. So, yeah.
I like that. That's really, it allows other people to participate and engage and report it. So at least it allows that moment when you realize, okay, this is not just for me who've been attacked or something has been said to me, but it could be also for somebody when you actually look at somebody else taking somebody's taking advantage of the other person, basically. How do you, when somebody, what's the process like now? Somebody reports it online or on WhatsApp, they send you the message, they report it. What is the process? And what does the person hear from you? What is the process when it comes to that?
Yeah, so online, if you go to reportinghate.ca, you will just click on the link if you're reporting for yourself or you're reporting for as a witness. And we will, you know, there are certain fields that are mandatory, you know, the date, the incident details, the location, but everything else is not mandatory. So it's really optional. And but we obviously do encourage those reporting to give us the details that will help us, you know, with some of the things that I already mentioned. And then at the end, we ask if you would like to receive one-on-one support, if they would like to, if this is an issue that is ongoing, if this is something that they're troubled with, they are not comfortable going to the police. We ask for contact information or provide our contact information that they can, you know, just contact and ask and get that one-on-one support. If someone is calling in person, there is obviously a dedicated phone man. The person in charge is Ikram Al-Mumini, who is who has the phone. She will be responding. She'll be collecting data confidentially and just really responding and respecting, obviously, the wishes of the caller. And if there is need for further assistance, she will connect the reporter to our one-on-one support. So Mifra will take over for that one-on-one support.
Do you find there's a spike anytime there's an incident? I know maybe that's an obvious question, but how? Yes. You know, what's the spike range like?
Yeah, you know, there's that's really unfortunate. Like when we were just the day of that Monday, when we heard the news, immediately in our press release too, we said that beware of copycats, because that was really intense time, and we were warning you know, our community members to be really, really vigilant, because unfortunately, after such a big tragedy, people, there is a spike. I mean, you know, there's a lot of outpouring of love and support, which is, we have to mention that. It's so beautiful. The people, we saw the images from London, you know, thousands of people came and showed up and, you know, wanted to just stand with the Muslim community. So we had that. We have this support here at the vigil, different vigils that took place in Waterloo region. So it's really amazing to see. And, you know, I mean, one of my neighbor came and she dropped a bag full of, you know, just nourishment for us and a note. And, you know, our neighbors expressing concern. And so that's absolutely, absolutely there. But yeah, the spike, this backlash, just today, actually, there was another incident at a Toronto mosque. I believe it's the Islamic Institute of Toronto, where two people were trying to enter the mosque and they were really, you know, very explicit, using explicit language and hateful language, and they were threatening as well. So police was called, and thankfully there was no injury or there was no harm done. So this is a time where you know, we saw in Alberta, well, I don't know if this was as a response, but you know, for the past 5 months we've been hearing just I mean, it's so infuriating to see, Somali Muslim women being attacked. Our Black sisters have been being attacked so regularly and so brazenly and so, it's so infuriating just thinking about this, that this has been happening. And the physical attack, being dragged with the hijabs, and also it's there, it's very real to us, and unfortunately that spike is there. And Fadwa, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, right? So when we talk about hate crime, those are just the tip of the iceberg. We know that those are the visible ones.
Yeah.
This was extreme with lives being taken, but just below the tip, there's a lot of this hate crime that actually happens here in Waterloo region. Women have, obviously we hear often how spitting, people throwing coffee at Muslim women, throwing eggs, and those cases absolutely happen, not too frequently, but enough to be concerned. And then below the surface, below the water, all that mass, which is 80%, their incidents, hate incidents, and the discrimination that is happening, be it Islamophobia, be it racism, be it xenophobia, be it anti-Black racism. So all of that is happening below the surface. It's visible to us. We know it's there, mm-hmm. but it's not visible to the larger public. So, yeah, that's in media. I don't blame this 20-year-old entirely. I don't blame this young person. 100%. I blame him. Obviously, he took an action. He was an adult, but he was brainwashed. But who washed his brain? Who was the one who associated these Muslims, any Muslims, to be to have this negative connotation that they are out there to challenge and change our ways and change our culture and take over, all those stereotypes that they have, media, mainstream media for 20 years, more than 20 years, they've been demonizing a whole community, and painting with such a broad stroke of the brush that, all Muslims are like that, and Islam is like that, and, constantly associating terrorism with Muslims and the women being oppressed and the men being violent, these images, if you keep on repeating them as news, then people are going to believe it. So I don't blame that 20-year-old.
No, it's unfortunate. We have to talk about this on a regular basis, when it gets, it's the same cycle. We keep talking about it. I just hope we'll get to a place where, even with the work that you do, we'll get to a place where we don't need to discuss about this, where everybody feels safe. And hopefully my prayers, and I know everybody's praying for, just you walk down the street and you don't even have to think twice if somebody's behind you or somebody's going to hurt you. That's our right. I think we all have a right to walk down the street and feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of, how I look at this work is that we are still, compared to many places around the world, we are in a good place comparatively, right? Like, no place is paradise or heaven. So we, there are always imperfections. And Canada is, definitely a good place, but there are serious problems. If we don't nip this problem in the bud, then it will just get out of hand. This will grow exponentially. And we know it has grown exponentially. We've been screaming and, no one is sort of paying attention. So maybe now they will. And if the genie is out of the bottle, then it's really hard to, capture it and put it back in. So we can't lose this team, we can't lose this momentum. This is, you know, sometimes these tragedies are an opportunity is a very negative word, but those are times when we can turn the tragedies into something good. So if these lives are not lost in vain. Mm-hmm. And if we can really take advantage of, obviously people are very sentiment and are too. We have a lot of pain within us. And if we could channel that pain into action, then, we come together as a community and we, do a lot of work that we can absolutely do. We are not victims. I don't really want us as a community to see ourselves as victims. We are very empowered. We can do and change so much, and we can, we are in a place where when we come to the table, it takes a bit of time, but things can change. It's really a matter of showing up. It's a matter of, asking for accountability. It's a matter of, bringing ideas and creating your space. And so there's a lot of, power that we have. And, it's just a realization of, we can make a lot of change. This tragedy can turn around, and it, if it brings some meaningful systemic level changes, those lives won't be lost in vain. I think we owe it to that family to do that kind of work and put in that kind of effort.
Yes.
For that little boy as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We all have that ability and capacity to do so, and we can make the changes. And you're right, we are not victims. We have a lot to offer. In this beautiful country, we have a lot to offer in our community, and we can just all come together, step up, show up, and just bring the best of us.
Yeah, and not just, yes. For our own sort of concerns, not just for Islamophobia, but, for Indigenous rights as well, for Black Lives Matter as well, for, and immigrants' rights as well. And so for the poor, for the marginalized, for the homeless, all of us, we really need to have support each other. And, people like what you're doing, Fatwa, like this is amazing, sharing those stories, sharing those, this perspective that we don't see this perspective. So each in our circle of influence, what can we do? I can't do this, but I'm strong in this. How can I make this strength work for the betterment of the community? So that circle of influence bit is also very very key.
Yes, absolutely. We all have the power to influence. Absolutely. And I love that. We're all human race. We are one race, and that's the human race.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters,
Yeah, and beautiful, like we have the beautiful diversity. We love it. It's so beautiful. We are so lucky to experience it. Growing up, I didn't experience this diversity. So this is really beautiful, cherishing it, and then making it work for everyone.
Yeah, and I guess that will be our last word: celebrate, embrace our differences, embrace and celebrate our diversity. And we all have different cultures, beliefs, but you know what? We have something so beautiful that we can share with each other that is just so magical, mm-hmm. if we just open ourselves to it. Well, Sarah, it was nice to have you here. I don't even know how time went fly by. It was nice to have you here. Thank you for taking your time to be on the show today.
So kind of you, Fatwa, for this opportunity, for your beautiful, presence and this creating this space. I really, really appreciate it. And it was lovely to be here.
Thank you. Gladly, gladly. Anytime. Pleasure, my sister. Well, everyone else, thank you for listening to the show. As usual, we're here every Friday, CKMS Radio 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo, from 6 to 7. You can also follow me on my YouTube channel, The Gems of Life Show. Subscribe, like, comment, and share. Share the gems and share, you never know who might benefit. Like always, I leave you with this message. Aspire to inspire. Thank you, everyone, and take care.
Hey, hey. Oye, bolilale, nadini kajagango, bolilale.